Guitar Will Travel, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine, with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies, and today I'm speaking with singer-songwriter Luke Winslow King. Luke joins us from his home in Spain. In our conversation, Luke shares with us what life is like in Spain, and he tells us about his experiences busking in Europe and dealing with gypsies, and his experiences with his band in Europe. Luke talks about living in New Orleans previously, and going to the University of New Orleans, and busking there as well with a group of musicians known as the Loose Marbles that eventually became Tuba Skinny, Hooray for the Riff Raff, as well as members of Luke's band. Luke describes his gear, including a resonator that he's had since 2001, and the rest of his gear, and a shout out to his home music store, Elderly Instruments. Luke discusses his early touring experiences with a group of friends following a book by Pete Seeger of Woody Guthrie songs called California to the New York Islands, and Luke describes his current tour schedule of traveling throughout Europe and the U.S., and talks about his bands, both in Europe and the U.S., and he gives us insight into booking gigs in Europe. Luke tells us about his new record, Coast of Light, his ninth album, and he describes his musical education. Luke discusses his future, recording an album with Little Freddie King, and another album for himself. To find out more about Luke, you can go to his website, lukewinslowking.com. That's LukeWinslowKing.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Oh, by the way, I have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/haveguitarwilltravelpodcast. Here's my friend Luke.
Hey there, Luke.
All right. How's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good.
Where are you at?
I'm at home in Spain, in Asturias.
Oh, wow. And where are you from originally?
I'm from Northern Michigan.
Okay. How is it being in Spain? And you've been there for a while, right?
Yeah, I've been here for 6 years now. It's great, man. It's rainy and windy this time of year, but... it's a good life over here. I'm loving it.
Yeah. Okay, good. And you went there.
Where are you calling?
I'm from Napa. I'm living in Napa, California right now.
Okay, cool. Yeah, nice.
That's all right. Also wine country, but a different type of wine country.
Yeah. I'm actually in the cider country of Spain, where they grow a lot of apples.
Really? The
famous cider here. Yeah.
So sort of northern Spain?
Yep. I'm kind of in between Galicia and Basque country and the north coast.
Okay. And there's like two small countries in between you guys and France.
No, I can go straight to France here. Okay. But you're saying the little countries that are in the Pyrenees, like Andorra.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Basque country. They call it a country, but it's not actually a country.
Okay.
It's like it's like the land of Basque, right?
Okay.
But I think Andorra is the only one in the mountains there, but there's also Gibraltar down there on the Mediterranean, which is British.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So what brought you to Spain? And was it right before COVID?
Yeah, I moved here in 2019. Okay. I met my wife on tour in 2016.
Okay. That's a good reason.
So, yeah.
And did you immediately fall in love with Spain and your wife?
Yeah, it kind of happened simultaneously. I had been touring in Europe and in Spain years prior. Uh-huh. But it just as time went by, it started to make more and more sense to live here. And then when my wife and I started, things started heating up, it made a lot more sense to move here.
So. Sure.
Yeah.
Because there's probably better healthcare there.
That's true.
Cheaper.
I pay a little bit more in taxes, but I don't pay anything for healthcare.
Yeah. When you were touring, were you touring as a solo artist or were you touring with a band?
I've done both. When I was in my early 20s, I used to spend my summers here. I worked in New Orleans and went to University of New Orleans studying music.
Okay.
And playing in all the clubs there. And then, you know, it got too hot in the summer, so I'd come over to Europe and and play on the street.
Uh-huh.
And that was mostly solo busking.
Sure.
But then around 2012, I started touring here with bands. Even earlier, 2010, I started touring here with bands more often.
Spanish bands or bands from the U.S.?
Bringing bands from the U.S.
Wow.
But also working with a lot of guys from Italy. My guitarist, Roberto, is from Tuscany, Roberto Luti.
Okay. And he plays on his new single?
Yep. And his brother also plays bass, actually. So I have an Italian crew that I travel Europe with.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
How was it busking in Europe?
Man, I had some pretty far out experiences, I'll say that.
In what sense?
It just, well, you just go from, you go from rags to riches in an instant. You know what I mean? Like you just like you're with like the street people, you know what I mean? Like you're 1 minute you're getting robbed by gypsies at knife point. The next you're like at a five-star hotel with, you know, armed guards guarding the diamond display with Julia Roberts and Kevin Costner there, like all in the same day.
Wow. Know? Wow.
Yeah. It's a wild
like,
trip.
So like seriously, gypsies are robbing you at knife point?
Yep, I got robbed by knife point in Rome one time by other gypsy musicians.
Wow.
Fellow buskers. Yeah. Yep.
Damn.
Yep.
Damn Romanis.
Yeah, I mean they were incredible musicians, and actually once you get to know them and like grow to have a respect for their territorial instincts, you kind of can manage to coexist. That the time that I was robbed at knife point, I actually like negotiated a price. Like I was like, I'm not gonna give you all the money, like how about I give you half, you know? Yeah. And they're like, okay, that's a reasonable cut, you know what I mean? And then they kind of respect you a little bit more next time for not having given everything, you know?
Yeah. Wait, back then, were you traveling with that resonator guitar or what were you using?
Yeah, that's a good call. Thanks for asking. That resonator guitar I bought in 2001 in New Orleans.
Okay.
And that's been my main busking axe ever since.
And were you using an amp or just the guitar and you?
Several times I've used amps, but mostly I would say 90% of it was just the guitar and voice live.
Wow. Yeah. And so you really have to project to get over everything that's going on the street.
Yeah. I mean, just the guitar being louder gives you a level that you have to push your voice to. But that's kind of one of the, you know, one of the most interesting things about busking is learning how to project and learn how to use your voice in that way.
Sure. And learning how to have eyes in the back of your head.
Yeah, I guess so. There's a lot of little tricks to busking, right? It's like you don't want to be too close to your tip jar. You don't want to be too far away from your tip jar. You know, you don't want to you don't want to try to command too much attention, but you don't also want to ask too little. Like there's all this, you know, something about balance that you find that you can later apply to a stage performance.
Sure. There's nuances for sure that make you successful at that. How long did you start busking before 2001 or when did you start busking?
2001 was my first busking trip. I actually dropped out of college to go busking with a bunch of friends.
Okay.
When I was 20 years old, I went, it was a trip called, it was a book that was called California to the New York Island. It was a Pete Seeger compilation of Woody Guthrie songs.
Okay.
And a few friends of ours decided to just take this book and perform it around the US. Wow. You know, so we left Michigan and went to California and to New Orleans and New York, and had some pretty wild stories on that trip too.
Anything that you want to share?
Well, I've mentioned it in a bunch of interviews over the years, but we got our car stolen in New Orleans with all the instruments in it.
Oh no.
Our first day in New Orleans, and I always tell people I stuck around New Orleans long enough to fall in love with the place and stayed for 15 years.
Wow.
But it was on that trip playing Woody Guthrie songs that all began. It's kind of a important chapter in my history.
Sure. And so it was specifically Woody Guthrie songs. That's all you were doing?
Yeah. On that trip. Okay. I guess we were picking up other songs along the way, but the theme of the trip was to play Woody's music around the US.
Yeah. That's fantastic. When you were traveling around Europe, what were you playing then?
You know, so in those years, so now we're fast forwarding from 2001 when I first came to New Orleans to when I first started busking on the street in Europe, which would have been around 2006 or 2007.
Uh-huh.
And by that time, I'd been in New Orleans long enough to soak up all that ragtime jazz and Delta blues stuff.
Yeah.
But I was mostly specializing in kind of ragtime and like traditional jazz, but doing solo renditions of that stuff.
Yeah.
Bessie Smith tunes.
Scott Joplin kind of stuff?
Not so much. That would be like more instrumental. I was doing more vocal stuff.
Okay. All right.
Did a couple Jelly Roll Morton numbers.
Yeah.
You know, I did some instrumental stuff as well, but mostly trying to sing. I was really into Ava Taylor. I did a few Ava Taylor songs.
Wow.
Ida Cox, some of the old Preservation Hall stuff.
And what were the Romani people busking with?
So what's that instrument? It's like a, it's a mellophone. What is it called? It's a hammer dulcimer.
With, okay.
It's a hammer dulcimer, but it has a sustain pedal like a piano.
Oh, wow. I've never seen, I'm not familiar
Cymbala. We'll have to clarify, you know, in our fact, ask our fact checker.
Yeah.
But they were playing, you know, gypsy jazz with guitar, upright bass with weed whacker chord.
Wow.
Yeah. And this really cool hammer dulcimer instrument with a pedal. Very cool.
Yeah. And sort of Django tunes or not so much.
Yep, that style, but also blended with, you know, with Romani songs too.
All right, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. Sorry to take you so far off of, of course. There, the
no, it's cool. It's cool to talk about, you know, the beginnings where all started.
Exactly. So that leads us to up to now. Like, are you playing all over Europe?
Yeah. Yep. This month I'm taking off. I'm doing a run. The first week of March I'll be in Italy, and then the last 2 weeks I'll be in Denmark, Germany, and Belgium.
Wow.
So that's just the month of March. In May we're going to be in Budapest.
Wow.
In Hungary, a few small towns in Hungary, and then we're going to Serbia too.
Wow. And so what's it like crossing borders, like with your gear and just like, I mean, is it just as easy as getting in a car and going across the border, or is there like a bunch of checkpoints and all kinds of crazy stuff?
It depends. The European Union is pretty smooth. Like it's almost like traveling in America. Like between US and France, there wouldn't be any border.
Uh-huh.
Or there's it's like a rolling stop kind of border, you know, almost nothing.
Yeah.
But then certain countries are different. Like if you pass into Switzerland, they're not a part of the EU. So you have to, you know, go through more rigorous checkpoint with the Swiss.
Uh-huh.
Also certain countries in the East are a little bit different, where they can be, you know, a little bit, you know, look into your history a little bit more. And this is like modern European travel. I remember 10, 15 years ago, they were a little bit more strict at the borders.
Okay.
Right. But I also have my European residency card and driver's license now. Cool. I go through a little bit smoother.
Yeah. And are you traveling? So you've got the resonator. What kind of resonator is it?
It's a National Delphi.
Okay. All right. A relatively new one, or an older one?
Yep. It was brand new when I got it in 2001.
Okay.
Right on. Yep. But actually my main stage X right now is that I'm playing a Gibson B25 natural.
Sure.
It's a 57 B25
with the big pickguard.
And and I put the vintage D'Armond sound hole pickup in it.
A new pickup or a vintage, like literally a vintage pickup?
It's a vintage D'Armond.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Did you pick it up there in Europe?
Nope, I got those both at my home shop. I got to give a shout out to Elderly Instruments in Lansing. Oh, yeah. That's my hometown shop. I love all those guys there.
Yeah, right on. How often you get back home?
I'm home pretty often. I think I did 4 trips in 2025.
Wow.
Wow. I was just there cross country skiing in January and did a couple shows.
Uh-huh.
We did the trip from Maine to New York to Atlanta to New Orleans. Big long trip during that ice storm all around the States. Yeah.
What kind of rooms are you playing?
Different rooms, depends on the city. You know, we played Chickiwawa in New Orleans, which is really cozy little place there. We played Eddie's Attic in Atlanta.
Of course.
Mercury Lounge in New York.
All big name places, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah.
Places people know. And then, you know, also breaking in some new ground in New Hampshire. We played, a new club there, the Music Hall Lounge.
Okay.
Yep. And then we played a really great spot, the Narrows Center in Falls River, which is outside Boston. Cool spot there too.
Is this you and a band, or you and another guy, or how does it work?
I was solo on the majority of that run, but my guitarist and partner Roberto Luti came from Tuscany and met me in New Orleans.
Did he really? Oh, right on.
Yeah. We actually were first acquainted there in my early years, in that like probably 2002, right after I moved there.
Uh-huh.
Roberto and I met through a fellow influence and blues musician.
Yeah.
So we kind of go back to our roots in New Orleans. So we like to go back there and play when we can.
Yeah. And did you graduate from the University of New Orleans?
No, I didn't quite graduate due to Katrina.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started playing gigs, and I actually moved to the Bronx. I moved to the Bronx right after Katrina.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I lived in Harlem in the Bronx for a while, and I was teaching music at a school for the blind and playing gigs up there. And that's when I first started working on my very first album right after Katrina. So that first record came out in 2007.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what number record is this one that's coming out? Or is it out now, or is it coming out?
Two singles are already out. It's coming out March 27th.
Okay.
It's my ninth album.
Wow. Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
It's nothing like being prolific.
It's been a long road, man. It's cool to see just how much music I've been able to make in different genres and have people go along with me for the ride.
Yeah.
You know? I've never really pigeonholed myself to any one style.
Yeah.
You know,
it shows.
I remember cats in New Orleans be like, man, don't do mixed bag, dude. Don't go down that road. Don't do mixed bag. But I did. I totally went mixed bag, and, you know, I'm just taking the slow route and just making music that I love. So
I'm going to move on to hip hop next with the next record.
I don't know about that. But, I'm always open to try something new.
Were you always into traditional types of music, I should say?
Yeah. I mean, my dad played guitar, and I grew up hearing my dad play music around the campfire. So I fell in love with his record collection and his music as a kid. Uh-huh. So I was really into classic rock and folk rock.
Okay.
Yeah. It's what I grew up on.
Yeah.
But then I got into jazz pretty early. Kind of through blues music, I got into jazz, you know, when I was still in high school. And then just I think I wanted to stay in school, but be able to spend as much time focused on music as possible. Yeah. That's kind of what led me into classical music, because I was like, how can I be in school, but be studying music all day? And classical music allowed me to do that. So,
And you thought to go into Berklee? That.
Nope. I had a bunch of friends. I went to a music academy for high school. It was called Interlochen. It's a great institution in Northern Michigan. And a lot of my friends went to Berklee from there. And I ran into some other Berklee kids in New Orleans after the fact.
Sure.
But nope, never wanted to go to Boston. It's a cool place, but I don't think I ever would have ended up there.
And so that's what you studied at University of New Orleans, was classical music?
Yeah, I was a classical composition student.
Wow.
So I didn't really have to pick an instrument, which was cool. I studied guitar and piano and orchestration, conducting. I was a percussionist in the orchestra. I was a tenor in the choir. So I just like got to do a lot of different stuff.
Yeah. And had you played piano before that, or was guitar always your primary instrument?
Yeah, I studied piano before I ever picked up guitar, and I was kind of, you know, always forced to take piano lessons through life, you know, even in college. And I love playing the piano. I love playing the piano still, but guitar has always kind of been my thing.
And what does your guitar collection look like right now, apart from the Gibson and the Resonator?
Yeah, I've got some cool old ones. One of my everyday pickers is a American Conservatory. It's an old parlor guitar from the 1880s, 1890s. Actually, a teacher at my school found it under a bed, and it was smashed, and they gave it to a luthier, and they told the luthier, if you can fix it, just give it away to somebody. And I had an old parlor that I had bought that broke on the road, and a luthier gave it to me, and it's been in my hands ever since. I love playing that. I've got a really cool 1930s Gibson L7.
Okay. Wow.
Which is it's a flat back arch top, and I've got a D'Armond Monkey on a Stick pickup on that, which is pretty cool. It's a real Frankenstein looking guitar. It's got the volume knob attached to the front of it and the monkey on the stick. It looks pretty crazy.
Yeah. Right. Those are cool guitars.
And I have a 59 ES 125.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. That's a good guitar too.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't travel with the Gibsons as much, but I did just release a new video, called The Dangerous Blues. It's a solo video. Uh-huh. And if you want to, link that out to folks, I'm playing that L7 in that video.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we'll do that for sure.
Yeah. And I'm playing through the Gibson amp that goes really well with it. It's a 67 Falcon that goes with it really okay. nicely.
All right. And, yeah. And what about the rest of your amps? Do you have more amps besides that?
You know, I play a new Supro amp.
Okay. Yeah.
The Supro, it's the Supro Royal Reverb with cool. the two speakers.
Yeah. You're just using the reverb on the amp.
That's right. I try to just go straight into the amp almost always. I'm pretty much anti pedals unless I'm in the studio.
Yeah. That's called busking mentality because you don't want to carry crap around.
It just, I don't know, man. The more I hear cats with pedals, I just want to hear the sound of the guitar, the sound of the amp.
Yeah.
There's so much you can do. The great, great guitarists that I was lucky enough to learn from can get so much sound out of their fingers and can get such a variety of sound by the way you use the guitar, switching between pickups and moving your hand around and using your hand to attack different things.
Yeah.
I feel like so much of that is lost with pedals these days, unfortunately.
Sure. Well, pedals and super compressed amps and all kinds of stuff, distortion.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I'm old school in a way. I'm still trying to learn that style of trying to get a lot of different sounds out of your fingers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it shows. It definitely shows in your music. Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Of course. Of course. And so is there an album? I mean, you haven't even released this one, but are you already working on tunes for your next one?
So there's a kind of a thing in the works with our buddy Little Freddie King out of New Orleans.
Okay.
He's a great blues man out of New Orleans. We haven't announced that yet, but I'm leaking it to you. We're working on something with Little Freddie.
Okay.
And I have plans for my 10th album, but I'm at least gonna wait a month until this one is rolled out.
Uh-huh.
And focus my energy on that until I start working on the next one. But
yeah,
I think I've as far as I've gotten, as I've decided, I'm not going to go into my catalog of tunes. I have a bunch of tunes I haven't recorded.
Uh-huh.
And I'm always like, oh, should I use this on the next album? What am I? I've pretty much decided I'm going to do all new stuff for the next album, that I'm going to write it fresh and record it.
Right on.
And I'm thinking, you know, I did the last two records in Italy, so I'm thinking about going back to the States for this one too.
Okay. Yep. To Michigan or...
Or maybe New Orleans.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Haven't quite decided that yet either, but just a couple ideas I've been tossing around.
If somebody was going to go to New Orleans, what's the best time of year to go there?
Wow. So, I mean, everyone would tell you to go for Jazz Fest or French Quarter Fest in April or May.
Uh-huh.
But I would argue Thanksgiving time is maybe the best time to go to New Orleans.
Okay.
The weather's still really nice and there's a few less people.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you want to catch all the legendary acts from around the world, go to Jazz Fest, obviously.
Uh-huh.
And you can see, you know, some of the best music happening anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
But if you want to like get to know the city at a regular time, I would say around Thanksgiving is a good time to go.
Good to know. And are you doing, are you booking all your gigs or do you have a management company or agent that's booking for you?
Yeah, I have a bunch of help. Yeah. Because in Europe, you kind of need someone who speaks the language in each territory.
Yeah.
So I have like between 6 and 8 different guys in different territories in Europe.
Uh-huh. Are they basically local promoters that are?
No, they're agencies that handle the whole country exclusively.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they work with the local promoters.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I have a U.S. agency and then a guy who kind of helps me with tour management and putting it all together.
Yeah. Is the routing always pretty cool?
I've been lucky to go some pretty cool places.
Oh, yeah.
In the last couple of years, but during my whole career, I've gotten to go some pretty beautiful places. I think we've gotten to 26 countries playing music, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes it's a little long and hard, but you know, we usually end up at least in, you know, one new country a year going somewhere interesting.
Wow.
So I can't complain. Yeah.
Have you been to Asia?
I haven't. I haven't yet. I've played in Australia, but I haven't toured in Asia yet, but I would love to.
Yeah, of course. And is it profitable to, you know, I mean, it must be profitable for you to tour around these different, but do you have to rely on merch to make it profitable, or is it you're just in there and you're making money?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a challenge, right? I mean, you have to balance between investing in new markets versus being able to actually make money in your places where you're already developed more. So I'm constantly, you know, trying to find that balance. It's like, how can I break into Eastern Europe? How can I, you know, try to develop Poland and you know, and still, you know, be able to go and make money in Spain or Italy or France where we're more well known. So I'm kind of always balancing that with, you know, also trying to stay current in the U.S. and tour there at least 2 or 3 times a year, and, you know, hit up all the different corners of the U.S.
Yeah, exactly. Like my corner.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't need to get down to Napa for sure.
Is it expensive to pay a band? You know, I mean, as a European band, it's got to be pretty expensive.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, you know, to take good care of your guys is always a priority, and it does cost money.
Yeah.
But I have a band in the US and a band in Europe.
Uh-huh.
And now I have a van and backline in both places. So that's been a big development. Yeah. Big development crazy. since the pandemic. That's been a project, right? To develop that and have that set up is cool. Yeah. Yeah, you're kind of always training up a new guy working on new tunes, making you forget which drummer knows which song, you know, exactly. That kind of stuff. But
and how do you?
But it's always work in progress.
Yeah, are you meeting them through the rest of you, through the other people in the band? Are you actively seeking?
Usually,
yeah.
Usually, I find my band members through existing band members.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I had the time and energy to go out scouting, but I rarely go out to live shows myself, unfortunately.
Well, of course, because you're always playing. Do you ever get
and I'm a country guy, so I'm always kind of, you know, far from a venue. It seems like.
Do you ever get a bug to go out and busk just like randomly?
I do. My wife laughs at me. She's like, I don't know why you still want to do that.
Because you want to play.
We just moved to the north, and there's this quaint little old whaling town, you know. It's like an old seaside town.
Sure.
It's full of restaurants, and I'm sure it's packed with tourists in the summer. I'm like, man, this would be perfect. I could busk here and no one would ever know it was me. You know, I could just kind of, it'd be like the old days. And she's like, you know, my wife's laughing at me like, you just can't get enough.
Do you have a separate name for when you're busking, like, that, you know, so you don't have to call
I don't. I've always gone by my own name, but
okay.
I was thinking it would be fun to even go busking without a tip jar, just to play.
Yeah.
You know?
Of course. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Just to get out and do it.
Yeah.
See,
watch people's reactions.
Yeah, it was, you know, I mean, just thinking about those old days in New Orleans when we all kind of came up busking on the street in New Orleans, it was a real heyday when we were there, you know?
Yeah.
In those years, in the early 2000s, you know, getting up at 6 a.m. to hold the spot. And
yeah,
I mean, there were times where we were playing with 10 piece bands with rugs on the street and a piano and dancers and a tuba and a, you know, 7-piece horn section. I mean, just insane. You know, the whole shebang was pretty cool.
What is the name of that band that does the busking in with the tuba in New Orleans, that's run by the girl?
There's a bunch. The band that I came up with. Oh yeah. So that is, they're called Tuba Skinny.
Yeah. Yep.
And Tuba Skinny and I, we all came out of a band that was called the Loose Marbles that started in 2007. And the Loose Marbles had members of Tuba Skinny, members of my band.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you're familiar with Hooray for the Riff Raff.
I know the name. That's about it.
Yeah. Members of Hooray for the Riff Raff were in the band, and also Mashiya Lake, who's a great trad jazz singer in New Orleans. She was in the band too.
Okay.
So it kind of was like a seed band that developed to a bunch of other bands that all went their own way.
Okay. All right. Well, right on. Thank you for the history lesson.
Yeah.
I always get a kick out of watching Tuba
Skinny. It's cool. You can still, they're cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can still find Loose Marbles, videos if you go on YouTube from back in those days.
I'm going to check it out.
And you can see some of the tuba skinny guys starting out. Yeah.
Well, it's been wonderful talking to you, Luke. I appreciate your time.
Pleasure is mine, man. Thanks so much for the call. I appreciate you.
Yeah, yeah, of course, of course. And best of luck to you. And I hope I really do hope I get to meet you out here in California eventually.
Yeah, man. Don't be shy. If you see that I'm headed that way or if there's a gig we should do in your neck of the woods, let us know.
Yeah.
Be cool, James.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, man.
It's my pleasure. Bye-bye.
See you then. All right.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar, Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.